So Matt started last week. No, sorry. Matt started 2 weeks ago in a series called Pace of Life. And 2 weeks ago, kind of like to set me up really well, like he tossed me a softball so maybe I could take a swing at it. Matt had this great quote. So today we're talking about pace of life as it relates to our family. So Matt talked about pace of life as it relates to our spiritual life, and later on we're going to talk about pace of life as it applies to community, and pace of life as it applies to our mission. But today we're going to talk about pace of life as it applies to our family. And so 2 weeks ago, Matt had this great word. Matt said, "The story of broken families can be read on their calendar." Man, I wrote that down right away when he said that. I thought, man, like, did you make that up? Or did you get that from someone? And he said, like, it just came to me this morning. The story of broken families can be read on their calendar. So today, what I want to do is I want to give you 2 days that you can mark on your calendar. That if you mark these 2 days on your calendar, and if you live into these 2 days, the story that can be read on your calendar will be a good story for you and for your family. But before we do that, before I share that, we have a special guest that we're going to bring to the platform this morning. So Dan Hasbrook, you want to come on up front on the platform here, and I'm going to give you a mic. And Dan and I are just going to chat for a moment. So Dan is, your pictures are up there, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so Dan is son of one. He has a father and father of two. And you saw their pictures, Brady and Ethan there. And so Dan had said something to me really interesting a few weeks ago that I don't want to say caught me by surprise, but I just took note of it. I thought, oh, wow. So Dan, first, can you share a little bit about your family's pace of life before COVID? Wife, two boys, what was your pace of life? What was your pace of life like before COVID?
Just like most people, was busy. I go to work in the morning, I get home, and then the first thing I have to do is most often was go to a practice. I didn't just have to drop my kids off at practice, I actually participated in practice, I was usually their coach, so basically it was nonstop from the time I woke up in the morning to the time I went to bed at night. I was just constantly doing something.
Yeah, so what all activities were your boys involved in?
They take tap dance, they take piano, they play basketball, baseball, soccer. That's just a few. I mean, there's always something. They're constantly doing something.
Yeah. March 16th hit. That's when we officially went red, I think, or maybe it was March 15th, 14th. Maybe it was March. Doesn't matter. Things started getting shut down, right? Middle school plays shut down. We had church in some semblance for the last time on March 15th. March 16th, I think, was when the schools said we're not going to bring kids in. And then, like, just dominoes start, right? Like no baseball, no dance lessons, no in-person piano
Basically
lessons.
Basically, everything we did shut down.
Yeah, everything we did shut down. So how did the boys feel about that? Nothing. They're just...
No. Yeah. My boys adapt pretty well. They took it as... It was almost like a summer vacation for them because they weren't going to school. Luckily, Brady's mom, Becky, she taught them every day. So I was pretty lucky while my wife and I were at work. My kids were being taught all day.
By a real-life teacher.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Not me. So, I mean, I can do my best, but we were grateful to have that to our disposal. But they didn't miss stuff. That was the most interesting thing. Like, with all the stuff that they did, they were just happy to be home. They never voiced, oh, I wish I was at practice. I wish I got to see my friends. I wish I got to do this. I wish I got to do that. And just sitting here, maybe I'm hoping this is why, but I'm not sure if this is why they didn't miss anything. I think it might be just the fact that because Lauren and I were home.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying that we had a bad family life prior to COVID. We were pretty involved with our kids and everything that we did. But I think they were happy that we were home.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I think that's so. First of all, I was like they didn't miss all that stuff. Like I thought they'd be chomping at the bit, and Dan said no. But so it affected your relationship in some way, just by you being home.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Is I was home, and I was with them 100%. So if we go to practice, I'd like to say that I'm focusing on my kids, but I'm not. I'm focusing on 10, 11, 12, 13 other kids. I'm not just focusing on my kids. And sometimes you're harder on your own children at a practice than you're on other people's kids. So, because I asked Lauren that this morning, I'm like, what did you like about me being home? and it was just a simple answer of, you were home.
Yeah.
You know, and I said, well, I didn't feel like we did anything like super special with the kids. And she just said, you were home.
Yeah.
Just the fact that you were home, you slowed down, you didn't feel like you were constantly having to do something. Because generally, if I'm not at practice, I feel like I need to go help someone. So I'm helping a family friend hay or do farming, or I'm going next door and doing something, but we weren't allowed to be around people. So I was home most of the time.
Yeah, so it wasn't just them that had to shut down a little bit. You had to shut down a little bit.
That's the big thing. I shut down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Put it in a good way.
Right, right.
Definitely.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Let's give Dan a good hand for coming up here, because he loves being in front of a crowd. So I love that phrase, I was home. So I want to talk to you a little bit about this, this whole matter of just being home. The first day that I want you to, that I want to talk about, and I want you to circle this on your calendars, I said there'd be 2 days. The first day is, are you ready? Sabbath. First day is Sabbath day. That's a really important day. I want you to listen to what God says about Sabbath day. So this is in Deuteronomy chapter 5. This is the fourth of the Ten Commandments. And God says this: observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy, as the Lord your God has commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, be as busy as all get out, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work. Now listen to what follows. On the Sabbath day you shall do no work, neither you nor your son or your daughter. I love that right away he mentions the kids. Like, on the Sabbath day I don't want you to work. And by the way, don't make the kids work either. So like when I was a kid growing up, so this is a really bad part about me. Whenever I was a kid growing up, my dad would ask me to do something or tell me to do something or whatever. Like, Tim, I need you to mow the lawn. Tim, I need you to trim the hedges. Tim, I want you to wash the car. Tim, I want you to clean the bedroom. Whenever he asked me to do something, you know what the first words out of my mouth were? It was a question. You mean right now? Right now? Do I have to do it right? And that just drove him nuts. Like, yes, right, right. But on the Sabbath, you know what? You can say, right now? It's like, oh, no, not right now. Because today is the day that we're just going to be home. So neither you nor your son or your daughter nor your manservant or your maidservant. And then listen to the heart of God in this. Listen to the voice of God in this. It's not just your immediate family that he's concerned about, not just the people in your under your roof. But your animals, not your ox, your donkey, or any of your animals. And then the people you don't even know, nor the alien within your gates, so that your manservant and your maidservant may rest as you do. Remember that you were slaves in Egypt. So in Egypt, they were just driven to achieve, driven to do, driven to build, driven to work, drive, 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 drive. 7 days a week, every day of the year, they were driven to work, driven to build, driven to accomplish. But God says, you know what? You're not slaves anymore. You're mothers and fathers, your sons and daughters. Don't be driven. Sabbath. It's the time to go, ah. It's the time to, you know what Sabbath is good for? Like, do you know what it's like when, let's talk about Saturday. And maybe you work really hard on Saturday. Maybe you get the lawn mowed. Maybe you get the garage cleaned out. Maybe you get the car washed and waxed. Maybe you get something fixed. Maybe you get something built. But at the end of the day, when it's done, you're able to look back on what you did in that day, and you're able to go, ah. That's the one thing I love about mowing the lawn. Like, mow the lawn. And you know what happens when you mow the lawn? The grass is short. And so that's great, because I can sit on my deck, and it's like, ah, look at that grass. It's nice. Or look at those weeds. They're nice and short, you know? So that's what the Sabbath is. The Sabbath is, man, I'm going to give it all I got for 6 days, but there's going to be this day on my calendar where I'm going to be able to savor what I've done, when I'm going to be able to take a breath from what I've done, a day when I'm going to be able to go, ah. That's what God did. Like, he created the heavens and the earth in those 6 days, and on the seventh day, it says he rested. He said, this is really good. And he goes, ah. You should all try that right now. Just go, ah. Ah. Feels kind of good, doesn't it? That's Sabbath. Sabbath is when we just go, ah. And we're able then, I want you to notice the genius of what God is doing with Sabbath. He's regulating the pace of your life. When God instituted the Sabbath, he's regulating the pace of your life. Because if it was up to us, we would just like go and 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 go, right? But the Sabbath comes in, and God regulates the pace. He helps us to change the pace. And so the Sabbath is like, it's like a governor on an engine that keeps the engine from going too fast, right? It's like a beta blocker for a heart patient. It keeps your heart from beating. It just keeps the beat down. The Sabbath helps regulate the pace of our life. So every seventh day, there we are, we're recalibrating. Okay, so we can do that. And it turns out then that the Sabbath actually is about family. Like, sometimes we say that. Well, it turns out that that's right. The Sabbath is about family. So it starts with gathering together with the new family we have in Jesus, the new family of God, and we have these ah moments with our family, where we don't let things get away. And it isn't that we can ignore our family the rest of the week. It's not that. It's because, like, just what Dan was saying, this matter of just be home. Just be home. Look, there's people you would know who their parents weren't home. And they didn't even know where their children were, and it did damage in their life. But to just be home, and to let Sabbath be a reminder of that, like, I got to be home. Well, so I said I was going to give you 2 days. So one day is Sabbath, that day where we just recalibrate everything, where we let God put the governor on our life. But every Sabbath day points to something that's called a new Sabbath. So the writer of the Hebrews said there remains a Sabbath rest for the people of God. So there's like this, here's a really fun word for you. There's like this thing that we would call the eschatological Sabbath. Like, it's the big Sabbath that's out there. It's the Sabbath of all Sabbaths. It's not the seventh day, and it's not the Sabbath of the 50th year. It's the eternal Sabbath. And so it's a new Sabbath in a new day, in a new city, on a new earth. And every Sabbath we observe points toward that final new Sabbath. So I want to show you something, what this looks like. In the year about 587, Jerusalem was sacked by the Babylonians. So just like us, they had ignored 1,000 Sabbaths. And for their lack of living in the life of God and observing the ways of God, they were destroyed. And their city was destroyed. And they're led away captive. So they're led away captive, and they go to this foreign city in Babylon, and they're going to be there for like 70 years out of the city, because God is going to give the city, he's going to give Jerusalem, he's going to give the land in Judah surrounding Jerusalem. He's going to give it that Sabbath rest that they had ignored 1,000 times and more. And so the land rests and the city rests because the people have all moved out. They've all been taken away. And so now it's time to return. And so the people are returning. And in their return, there we go, sorry. In their return, there were prophets that spoke to them. So one of them was this prophet named Zechariah. And one of the things Zechariah is wanting to say to them is like, don't go back to the way it was before. So like we've been kind of hammering on that, right? Like when we're fully out of this, let's not just go back to old normal. Let's go back to some kind of a new normal, a better way. And so that's what Zechariah is trying to say to them, like don't go back to the way it was before, whatever else you do. And so the people are coming back from exile, and they come back in phases. So it's just kind of like what we're going through. Like first there's the red phase when we're in exile, like everything's shut down, and then the Israelites moved into the yellow phase where they were allowed to return, and they came back in several different waves of people, and then they rebuilt the walls, and that was like the yellow phase. And then they said, you know, can we rebuild the temple? And that was like the green phase for them. And so they rebuild the walls and they rebuild the temple, and people are, they're sad. They're sad because it's not what they expected. It's not what they anticipated. They felt like it wasn't as good as it was before. And so Zechariah, he's speaking to them, and he's encouraging them. He's trying to help them out. And this is what the prophets do. This is what the prophets do. The prophets, they help people see. So the prophets have a vision, and they have a vision for things as they should be. And so the prophets are trying to describe to the Israelites and encourage them and saying, look, this is what the Lord is going to do, and this is what you need to do, and you need to align your life with this vision that God has for you. But whenever they have this vision, they see more than they even can say. It's kind of like if you drove out west, and when you drive out west and you cross the plains, you can see in the far, far distance, you know that there's a mountain range out there, but you don't realize how large it is and how majestic it is and how staggered it is. Like it's not just one flat mountain range and you can get over it. It's boom and boom and boom and boom and boom. So the prophets, they see something and it looks like it's up close, but there's something further back. There's something beyond. There's something further on. And it's the new day. It's the day of the Lord. It's the day when the world's one true king returns to his city and establishes his kingdom, and he sets the world to rights. And the prophets see that day, and they describe that day. And when they do, well, let me read to you what Zechariah sees. He says to the Israelites, the word of the Lord Almighty came to me. This is what the Lord Almighty says. I'm very jealous for Zion. Zion is just like it's the name for the mountain that Israel's built on. So in the Old Testament, when you see Zion, you can read Jerusalem. They're pretty much synonymous. So the Lord's jealous for Zion. I'm burning with jealousy for her, he says. And this just means that he wants so much for her. He doesn't want her to be captivated by lesser loves. He wants Jerusalem to be captivated by God's love and the beauty of the life that God has for her. So he's jealous for her. And this is what the Lord says. I will return to Zion and dwell in Jerusalem. Then Jerusalem will be called the city of truth, and the mountain of the Lord Almighty will be called the holy mountain. So this is just like one snapshot of this new city in the new earth on the new day. This is what the Lord Almighty says. Once again, men and women of ripe old age will sit in the streets of Jerusalem, each one with a cane in hand because of his age. The city streets will be filled with boys and girls playing there. That's kind of a really lovely picture, isn't it? This is the way Eugene Peterson renders it in the Message. Old men and old women will come back to Jerusalem, sit on benches on the streets and spin tails, move around safely with their canes, a good city to grow old in. And boys and girls will fill the public parks, laughing and playing, a good city to grow up in. Come on, isn't that like the greatest? Like when you think about a new city and a new day and a new earth, a city where it's good to grow old in, and a city where it's good to grow up in, like that's just the best. And you know, Jerusalem never experienced that. Not yet, because the prophet was on the shoulders of God, and he saw the distant city that was coming when the king returns. But what he wants them to do is, like, would you live into that vision? Live toward that vision. Move toward that vision. Like, you can't make it happen, but you can move toward that vision. The prophets were like people that were lookouts in a crow's nest. So here you are in a ship, and you're going west, but all you see is ocean. And the prophet's the one that's in the crow's nest. The prophet's the one with the telescope thing. And he sees land. This way. No one else can see it. But the prophet can point to the direction. It's this way. Like, we're off course. See, when we ignore 1,000 Sabbaths, when we're never home, we're off course. We're not moving toward the new day in the new city on the new earth. We're just away from it. There's another beautiful picture where the prophet Micah says that in that day they will take their swords, weapons of war, and beat them into plowshares, and they'll take their spears and they'll form them into pruning hooks, and every person will be able to sit underneath their vine and their fig tree, and nations won't learn war anymore. Like, what kind of a great day is that? When you never have to live in fear of violence of any kind, because every weapon of violence and every weapon of war has been turned into something that produces good and has been turned into something that nourishes life, and you can actually sit under your vine. What does that assume? It's like you actually were able to plant a vineyard, and now you can sit beneath it and enjoy its fruits, and you can sit underneath your fig tree and enjoy the fruits of your labor. That's what a Sabbath is. When you're able to enjoy the fruits of the work that you have put forth And the prophet Micah, he sees that day when there's just no more of destruction. There's only the fulfillment of what we've been able to produce. So when we think about that vision that Zechariah has and that Micah has, and we know we're not there. So we observe Sabbath week by week, and we listen and we see the vision of the prophet moving toward that new day, and we try to live into that. And how do we do that? We commit ourselves to honoring the elderly, to honoring our parents and our grandparents, like we do on a day like today. And we commit ourselves to creating safe places for our children to grow. That's what being home's about. Places that are free of abuse. Places that are free of this intense pressure to perform more and better and faster. A safe place to play in the streets. That's the vision that the prophet had. We commit our lives to living without violence, and without destruction, and without killing, because we know that day's not here yet, but you know what? We're going to beat our swords into plowshares, because that's the vision we're moving toward, and we're going to take our spears and turn them into pruning hooks, because that's the day we're moving toward. We're going to commit ourselves to people being able to engage in meaningful and purposeful work and allow them to be able to receive the fruits of their labor. We've all got to live in to what we see, but we need to see it. We need to lift up our heads and stand on the shoulders of the prophets and see this vision of the new heaven and the new earth, a vision of God's kingdom and God's city that we live into. Can we bring that into being? No, we don't. We don't bring it into being. But we don't let the world go to hell. We labor as God's church to live according to God's kingdom ways, so that every man, every woman, every mother, every father, every child can live as if. Live as if. We move toward the kingdom the day when God again dwells with us. I think it was an Easter song, right? When we sang antiphonally, does our God intend to dwell again with us? He does. He does. It's the coming kingdom when the world's one true king comes to set the world to rights, and we can see it. And we can move towards it. That's what I want to do, to live in the direction of God's kingdom. Like, do you want to join me in that? Would you join me in that? Just be-